Nick, I forgot to tell you, we also have really fancy special effects. Watch this.
Yeah, yeah. Whoa. Where'd that come from? Incredible.
That's how we impress people with our high-tech live streaming techniques. There you go.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. Let us know, gang. I'm having some audio and some minor video issues on my side, but it may just be me. So keep us honest in the chat there, friends and gang who've joined us. Let us know that things seem okay to you, because I'm running the Logitech G Hub app today for my Logitech camera. And I think it's burning CPUs on me or something. So anyway, Brent, how's your world today? How's your world, Brent?
It's good. It's good. I just got back from vacation. I believe a couple weeks ago we told everybody I'd be gone last week, and so I had a fantastic time. Yeah, maybe we forgot to mention it. Oops.
Nobody would have noticed because Crowdcast died on us last week, so we didn't actually get to go live. Period. So
awfully sorry about that, but I got to miss 116 degrees in Arizona. So that was the positive upside for me.
Man. Yeah, it's been switching to Celsius because we've crossed the border, but we've had a streak now of close to 30 with the humidex, or close to 40 with the humidex, over 30 without it here. And that's a long streak for about 2 weeks now for us here in Eastern Ontario. So we also have
Probably find out where our guest is hanging out so he can share his weather too.
Yeah, we've got Mike Kunkel joining us. Mike, where's your geography and how's your weather?
I am in the far northwest suburbs of Boston in a little town called Billerica. Oh. And I don't know what it's like outside. I don't go there anymore. I said it's about 70 in here and the weather's great.
And no chance of rain. So
what? Let's just say we hope not.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a different kind of emergency then.
The puppy knocks over a candle, sprinklers go off. Lord only knows what'll happen.
Yeah. And you do have a pupper with you. You were showing us in the green room. I don't know if he's still handy because
hey, Frank.
Is that Frank?
That's Frank. He's not very happy at the moment because I took him away from chewing a big bone to do that.
Ah, I see. Yeah, if I was a dog, I'd be still like, dude, leave me be. You know, I'd be in that same mode too, for sure.
Yeah, he does like to try to drink my coffee though, hence the lid.
Hmm. Yeah.
Cheers, instructional designers who drink coffee.
Yes, or other hot beverages of their choice. We're an inclusive group here. We're not exclusive to coffee. So
okay, heat up some rum, maybe.
Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, I think is the appropriate phrase. So it's instructional design o'clock somewhere. We'll coin
everybody's
that.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. So Mike, just give us a can it be iced? It can be anything you want. You can, you know what, you've got it in a mug. No one's going to tell, especially in the era of work from home due to COVID. So, we've got Mike Kunkel joining us. Mike, this is your first time joining us, so give us a little overview of yourself, your background, your 30-second bio, so people know a bit more about you before we jump into today's conversation.
Sure. Yeah, I normally say I've been in the sales profession for 35 years, but along that journey, probably the last 25 or so, I've been focused on sales performance improvement, and in every single one of those jobs, training has been a huge piece of it. So I was the geek in the early days when they said, so are you more into classroom training or do you like to do instructional design? And, you know, I always said both. I was the weirdo who wouldn't allow myself to get pigeonholed. So I actually did years and years ago when I was thin and had hair, went through Megger's criteria referenced instruction and that certification process. I'm a big fan of HPT or human performance improvement, or you know, whatever the phrase is this week, right? The stuff out of ATD and the International Society for Performance Improvement. So I've had a performance focus for most of my career, which has worked out really well in sales, because if you can't move the needle, you get moved on. So that's I've had a variety of roles in everything from Fortune 10 straight down to startup software companies. Today, I'm the VP of Salesforce Effectiveness Services for Sparks IQ. And, you know, we're a provider of pricing and sales analytics, sales training, and sales enablement.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I like that phrase, if you can't move the needle, you'll get moved on. That's catchy. That will stick.
Sad but true.
No, and it is true. We do think of ourselves in the learning and development world as, you know, teaching, but we always have to keep in mind that it's actually about improving performance so that you know, organizations can improve and do better and get better, etc. So
shout out to Denise, who is a big fan of HPT and ISPI. It's interesting. We do a coaching course where we say, if you're going to coach somebody, which means help them improve their performance, you have to first understand whether they know what to do, why to do it, how to do it, maybe even when and where to do it. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have that, they need to be trained first, right? So training will solve certain problems, but it won't improve performance in all cases. And one of the big challenges I've seen is people trying to apply training to problems it just won't solve.
For sure.
You know what? Yeah. I think that's a great place for us to kind of kick off the conversation. Like, give us a couple of those, because we've talked about this a few times, but not from the perspective that you're coming to us with it. So what would be a typical problem that people try to solve with training?
Well, I don't, if you guys are familiar at all, if you're familiar at all with Ferdinand Forney's work, he wrote one of my favorite books, longest title in the world, Why Employees Don't Do What They're Supposed to Do and What to Do About It. Honest to God, that's a title, and it's still in print. He's passed on, but you can get it at Amazon dirt cheap. Yeah. It's so he lists these 16 reasons, and we've adapted that work a bit and expanded on it. But, you know, if they don't know what, why, or how to do something, you know, training is the first response. If they know what, why, or how to do something, but they need to do it better, then feedback or coaching become important. You know, if there are consequence problems, right, if there's things like you get rewarded for not doing it, or you get punished for doing it, if there are consequence problems, you could train people all day long, and it's not going to solve that problem. If there are real constraints, the person doesn't actually have the capability, or you're asking people to do something that's unreasonable or can't be done, or you have someone whose job is to make copies very quickly for you in a photocopier, but you put the photocopier in the building next to the one you're working in, right? And which is just a silly example of how we set up organizational constraints very often. You can train people, again, all day long, and it's just not going to address those problems. So if you aim training at problems it will solve, you have a chance of actually impacting performance and getting an ROI. And if one more person says that training doesn't produce an ROI, you know, I'm going to scream, right? Because I have absolutely seen training deliver phenomenal results in organizations, but it has to be aimed at a problem it will solve, and you have to implement it effectively to actually change behavior, because basically we're in the behavior change business.
Yeah, and what you're speaking to aligns with like another model that I often turn to, and it's the five moments of need, which talks about you know, training being for people who are new to something or need to achieve a certain baseline, but then at a certain point you flip over to doing things like you know, performance support and other things like that, where training no longer really is an applicable model for helping, you know, three out of the five moments of need where someone has for learning on the job.
Yeah, shout out, Sean. I saw your note, too. Looks like Sean is also a CPT.
Yeah, and speaking of the frameworks and stuff, let's just jump right into your screen here. I'm going to go ahead and do a quick screen share and maybe talk us through the You've got this set up, and I do think I did prep everybody ahead of time with our marketing information that, you know, this is that you are focused currently on the sales stuff. But like you mentioned in your introduction, it's all training. It all requires training, and you have a very deep background in that. So this is the part that really got me interested in how you talk through training systems and create, you know, these types of plans that really do produce results. So kind of walk us through this. And if you want me to start from the beginning of the slide deck, I can do that too, or we can just talk through this one either way, whatever works.
No, this is fine. It'll evolve a lot of click the next thing, right? So this is what I call the sales training system today. I started this work, well, probably back in 1994-ish, and it's evolved over the years. I've called it a few other things, but it's based on the premise, some of Kurt Lewin's work, right, where he talked about unfreeze, change, and refreeze, right? So we've got some similar steps in here: prepare for change, guide the change, and cement the change. And people usually groan at me when I talk about sales enablement or sales training or training being change management or behavior change, because everybody hears these stats, like from the Cotter organization, that 70% of change initiatives don't produce the desired result. Well, no kidding, right? 30% of them do, however. What are those people doing? And how can you model after that? So this all starts for me in the center of the diagram in the circle with training content. No matter how good you do the rest of the things around that center, if you don't have content that will actually produce results in the real world, performance results when you implement it, or I'm going to just talk sales if you don't mind, because it's where I'm sitting these days. If the content that you're teaching won't help salespeople get better results, doesn't matter what else you do, right? So you've got to start there. And that really gets back to needs analysis and what I call top performer analysis, is analyzing what do your top people do, or what are the industry best practices that you wish even your top people did better. And how does that compare to what the folks in the middle are doing and your lower performers are doing? And then what are the differentiating factors? And how can you capture that? And how can you write these type of things into your onboarding and your ongoing training? And if you start with that, with top producer analysis, you can ensure that what you're teaching will get results, again, when training is the solution to the performance problem. So, or part of onboarding, right? When you bring in new people and need to get them up to speed. From there, it goes up to learning design, right? In this first prepare for change piece. And, you know, I don't need to tell the people who listen to this podcast how important this is. And this is one of those pet peeves of mine, that it seems for some reason to everyone on the planet that if you know something about anything, that suddenly you could be an instructional designer. And I see so many people developing absolutely horrible learning experiences because, hey, they know something about something. And my counsel always is, look, you know, whether you want to hire somebody or whether you want to go rent somebody, get the talent from someone who understands evidence-based practices about how people learn in learning science, and develop training that will be an experience that will help your learners learn. And that includes actually some of the five steps in the next stages, but go, you know, get the design talent who knows what they're doing. And then there's manager engagement. This is a huge missing piece in a lot of training efforts. How often do organizations train, let's say, their sales managers first on what they're about to train their sellers? I rarely see that happen organically on its own. So engage your managers, teach them what the reps are doing, and then empower them to understand how to assess how well someone is using the content, you know, what the metrics and measures for that might be as well, and then whether they need to train or coach to help them improve performance. You've got to prepare your managers to then guide through this next stage. And the next stage in the darker blue is guide the change. This is what I call the five stages of sales mastery and behavior change. And you know, you guys will, this will resonate for you pretty quickly, right, for folks on this podcast. But first of all, you're teaching something, right? There's knowledge acquisition. If I could get people to stop using the phrase knowledge transfer, I'd be clapping for hours because there's no such thing really. Or actually, if you look it up on Wikipedia, it means something else. But I hear people using the phrase knowledge transfer all the time. But you're just basically learning. Teach them something in that great learning design that you came up with. And then once they know it, what's your purposeful plan to help them sustain that? Because we know there's a forgetting curve, right? And, you know, people quote a bunch of statistics about that that aren't accurate too, but we know that it happens, right? If you put something in my right ear, sooner or later, it's going to fall out my left ear if I don't do something or use it or have a plan to sustain it. So whether you're using the tools on the market that will help sustain things and send questions, and you can, you know, you can answer those questions and reinforce it, whether you're doing it in some other way, have a purposeful plan for knowledge sustainment. Then it's about skill development, because if you're doing sales training, at least, if you're not trying to get people to do something more effectively to get better results, you're probably wasting their time. So how will you set up safe practice and feedback loops to help them actually develop the skills that you want them to have? And then, you know, as you guys know, this is where a lot of it breaks down next in skill transfer. Even if they learned something, remembered something, and practiced something, doesn't mean they're going to do it or use it on the job. So how will you set up systems to help them transfer that, right? Whether it's job aids, whether it's manager toolkits, where the managers have little meetings to help them use the job aids and prepare for their next sales call to use the skills, whatever it might be. And there are, you know, there are even systems now that can plug into a CRM and, like, you know, put the methodology or the process right into their workflow and remind them of what to do and here are the tools to do it, et cetera. But in some way, have a purposeful plan to transfer. And then, you know, even though they learned it, remembered it, practiced it, and tried it, doesn't mean they did it well or they're going to continue to do it. So how will you use those managers that you prepared earlier and engaged to actually help coach the rep to mastery over time? Yeah. And even if I just got people doing those five stages, things would get better. But then lastly, right, in the cement the change, you know, what are the metrics and measures that you're going to use to determine, are people in fact doing what they've been taught and what results is that producing? Imagine going through all of this and then never holding anyone accountable. And I remember an ATD survey in their state of sales enablement last year where something over 50% of respondents said the single biggest challenge in sales training was sales reps not being held accountable to use what they were taught, right? So you've got to wrap this somehow into whatever performance management you do. And then lastly, again, while it makes people groan, you have to treat this entire thing as a change project. So whether you're implementing great onboarding, whether you're solving a particular performance problem, whether you're implementing a qualification methodology or an entire sales methodology, if you can get a sales training system like this in place, it starts to get away from the fantasy of, oh, we've just trained people and they'll go do it. And I've seen some significant business impacts from that have cost companies probably well over $1 million with a decent sized sales force. And you can avoid it all if you take a logical approach. Mm-hmm. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, as they say.
So much of this resonates, and from various angles, we've had this conversation in different ways. I mean, even just looking at your guide the change section, it's not just about giving people information or teaching or whatever. It's about moving that forward then into the real world. It doesn't matter if someone got 100% on that 10-question quiz in the LMS 3 weeks from now. They're not going to remember a lot of the information because that's just the way that the human mind works. So strategies to help them, you know, move that, keep that, retain the information first of all, but then begin applying it on the job. And I think with the 5-minute moments of need structure, that's where, you know, where we tip over into all those things where they talk about, things like performance support, et cetera, to make sure that people have quick information to be able to double check, you know, am I doing this right? For example, when they go to do a task for the first time, you know, in the real world.
Yeah, that is exactly right. Performance support, right? I forget you know, I have to, I've learned to change my language a lot based on the audience that I work with. And I work a lot in sales, obviously. And if you say performance support, generally no one has a clue what you're talking about. Yeah. You know, so it's nice to hang with people who speak the same language as I do.
Yeah, but at least you have the ability to change that so that they can get the concept too. It's, I mean, yeah, for sure. Then you're not having to teach them what performance support means as a starting point, and then muddying their understanding from that. So yeah. Here's a question: coaching to mastery over time. Mm-hmm. The phrase coaching evokes, I think, for me anyway, a human. Does it always have to involve a human? Do you have any strategies that don't involve humans as coaches, or have you seen anything like that working?
There are apps and, you know, AI and machine learning things that are in development. Mm-hmm. I haven't necessarily seen anything. Maybe you guys have an example of something that I would say really replaces that. The closest thing is probably the workflow performance support tools that I've seen. You know, there are a variety of vendors that I mentioned earlier. They plug into CRM and they remind you, sort of like prescriptive selling, they remind you to, oh, this is a point at which you might do this. There's, you know, some of that, but it's not necessarily coaching. There are a series of apps in a category that's now called conversation intelligence, where real sales calls are recorded and then AI analyzes them and points things out. Like, you know, did you realize that you did, you know, 70% of the talking in this call rather than the optimal 54%? So there are things that are developing like that. But if we come back to really wanting to move the needle, I don't think we're quite there yet. And I think that human to human coaching, although supported by some of this kind of analysis, you know, I teach managers, for example, to use the available diagnostics and reports and tools they have to look at the rep's performance and figure out where is it likely that if I'm going to spend time coaching this person, that I'm going to help them solve a problem and get better results. And, you know, that process, I think there are tools on the market now and, you know, diagnostic tools mm-hmm. and coaching apps and things that can shorten that diagnostic time frame substantially. So, I think Frank wants to join us. Hi, Frank. We're on a podcast now. Thanks a lot, buddy. So this is actually how I sit a lot of my time on Zoom calls. Although with that, I can put up a fake background, and you know, people don't see Frank. All right, we can't chew the bone up there, buddy. It makes noise. Yeah, he's
I was thinking
he's a good boy.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking about number two on the slide there, the sustainment part. I think a lot of people, and this kind of ties into what Chris was asking about, a lot of people immediately go to tech for that sustainment stuff a little bit. But for me, it always felt like sustainment would work if there was just good conversations going on between peer groups. And then you've added the manager engagement in there. To me, that seems like a good place for that as well. Just that constant sort of conversation around the topics of the things that everybody has just learned and everybody kind of working together and helping to basically sustain each other.
Yeah. So do you guys remember Broad and Newstrom back in the 70s or 80s, or the transfer of training book? It was the first place I latched onto the concept of before, during, and after. Right. If you look at all of the stakeholders in the training, what are they doing before the training? What are they doing during the training? What are they doing after the training? And stakeholders might include, obviously, the trainee and the trainee's manager and the trainer themselves. But, you know, it could be peers as well and cohorts that you're going through this process with. So imagine that you had some type of orchestrated plan that didn't involve a lick of technology, although it certainly could. But you just got people talking about stuff and sharing their experiences. Now, today with sales enablement software, You know, it's possible to create a quick recorded video. Hey guys, I just had the coolest thing happen. I tried this technique XYZ that we just learned in our training class with a customer, and this is the result that I got. And then somebody else chimes in and shares another video about how that happened. And all of a sudden, you've got a lot of sustainment and peer reinforcement and people sharing success stories, and you're building excitement about it. And you can orchestrate that, you know, with technology. You could orchestrate that on a conference call, right? But you have to have some kind of a plan to, if you want to orchestrate that and make it happen. And that's where I see people falling down, is they just, you know, they pop out the training. They think, you know, hey, I've done my job. I'm done here. And, you know, and then they, you know, then they wonder why it doesn't work. And I have an example of a place that spent probably from implementation through the first 6 months, $500,000, $500,000 on doing a sales methodology implementation. They refused to listen to almost any advice about, you know, sustainment, practice, transfer, et cetera. And then, you know, a year and a half later, right, after probably racking up, you know, $1 million and training all the new people that kept coming on because people were turning over, then they said, oh, well, you know, this methodology doesn't work. Let's do another one. And they, you know, they laid down $250,000 to roll out a different methodology. There was never a problem with the methodology, right? It was really that they just didn't follow any type of system and planning and execution, you know, and stick with it long enough for it to become part of the culture, which basically is just the way we do things around here, right? And you know, if you can get to that point, now look, you know, do you want to go through this sales training loop with every single piece of training you create? Well, I guess the question is, how important is the outcome? Does it involve a human behavior change? Do you want it to stick? You know, if you're teaching an accountant a new procedure, right, you might not need to go through this entire thing or focus on every aspect of it. You know, it might be something that gets reinforced in some other way, or, you know, someone else is checking and auditing work, right? But if you're trying to change behavior and performance, I don't know how you do it other than having an approach that walks you through. Did they learn it? Did they remember it? Did they practice it? Have they tried it? And, you know, is someone helping them get to mastery with it?
Mm-hmm. Kim posted a question in the questions and answers panel. How does the sales training system intersect with the learning ecosystem of a business?
Well, probably hard for Kim to do this in chat, right? But, you know, it would be great to get some clarity on what learning ecosystem for the business means for her. But yeah, let's just say it's the entire structure of how, you know, how learning is set up inside of an organization. And, you know, to some degree, right, 70-20-10, although I think it's probably 10-20-70 in terms of real implementation. But I think that this system lives inside of the learning ecosystem for a business. And I think you apply it when what you're teaching requires behavior change and has an expectation for a performance impact. And then again, I think there are elements of this system that can be applied in, you know, to other training that doesn't meet those two criteria, but you don't necessarily, you know, need to have all of them in every case. If you're doing onboarding for a new employee, you know, I would think you would want to use this, you know, whether they were in sales or whether they, you know, were coming in to be part of the service or the operations team, some other team in the company. Yeah. You know, because if we're going to invest in learning and development and talent development, if we truly think that, you know, our people are really our differentiators, then it makes sense to teach them the right stuff and then teach them and support them in a way that will help them be successful. But I don't like to whitewash it and say, you know, this becomes the way that you train everything, because I just don't think that's realistic. And in many cases, the effort that goes into this won't produce an ROI for some other basic type of things.
Yeah. When people talk about, you know, the phrase learning ecosystem often, you know, refers to the various sort of technology tools, et cetera, that are available. I mean, what you've got outlined here is technology agnostic. You know, first of all, it could be instructor led and tracking things with, the, you know, with a spreadsheet if you needed to be. But there are pieces of this that could be, you know, the training portions could be, you know, LMS driven, which many organizations have. But even the description you were offering a moment ago about, you know, people recording a quick video about how they've had success. Well, that can be shared many ways, right? That could be,
right.
It could be a webinar where everybody's getting together. It could just be posted to a, you know, a Teams or a Slack channel where everybody gets to access it and can chime in. And, you know, so lots of different ways to carry these things out or implement them, even with the, you know, the tools that, that are already, you know, existing within an organization. I mean, heck, you could email links out to a video to tell everybody to check out the video, you know. Right. There's it's not really, I think there's an opportunity to say, hey, these are great steps. What are things that we have in place already without having to look around and perhaps invest in, you know, more tooling even to be able to carry out many of these pieces of the equation.
Okay, so sort of like the tech stack. So Brent, in that deck, in that deck that you've got, there's a slide that says how sales tools and services can support the five stages. Can you display that one for a sec? And you might have to, there you go. And there are probably some builds with that. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So this is, and again, this would be, it would be cool to brainstorm, and you should internally with your companies to the point just made about how the tools or services that you might be able to provide can support the five stages or any aspect of the sales learning system. But this is just something I show people quickly in webinars to say, okay, look, in stage one, knowledge acquisition, you know, there are learning platforms, there are LMSs, there are enablement platforms, there are, you know, a ton of ways to, you know, carrier pigeon, right? How are you going to get the knowledge out to people, right? Stage two, right? There are specific, that's right. I love the carrier pigeon thing. Stage two, there are specific learning reinforcement systems out there. And then there are learning reinforcement systems that are built into LMS systems today, right? Because, you know, the LMS is like, as you guys would well know, right, has progressed far beyond just the delivery mechanism for go take this course. You know, now it really is supporting the learning journey. You know, there are virtual practice environments for skill development. And I worked with one company as a partner for a while when I was consulting, who actually would say, okay, what are the skills here that you've taught the sales force in your program? How would you want to certify those? What would you want to see? And they would work with you to build a series or a role play or a series of role plays that would really assess whether the reps had those skills. Then they trained their sales coaches on how to play the customer in that role play. And they set up either a phone bank or a series of WebEx links where the rep could just click into or call into this meeting, and the person that picked up would be a coach, and they would be ready to role play that scenario or the next one in the series. That call would get recorded, and at the end of that call, the person that was the coach who was playing the customer would flip their hat around from customer to coach, would coach the rep on how well they did, and that would get recorded. And then both of these recordings got sent back to both the sales rep and their manager. And, you know, both would have this recording of how did the rep do in the role play and what was the coaching session and the feedback that they received after that. Now, you know, there isn't a lot of that on the market today. In fact, with all of the sales enablement apps, they all do something that's a little bit more like one-sided messaging. They'll send out a challenge in their system that says, how would you respond to this customer concern? And the rep fires up their webcam or their phone and they record a response back. Most people don't submit their first response, right? So they record it again. No, they delete that when they record it again. And basically we're fooling sales reps into practicing. then they finally submit one and they get some feedback from, you know, from their manager. Now that's only one-sided. And the challenge with that in my perspective is that sales is really about, can you have an effective conversation with someone? Can you ask great questions? Can you interact based on how they've responded to you? Can you help people have an aha moment or see something differently? And you just can't do that in a one-way asynchronous method. So I'm surprised that there aren't more of these virtual practice environments, and there's probably a great opportunity for that out there. But you know, if you look over to the skill transfer, then, you know, this could be as simple as paper or digital job aids. It could be sales playbooks, manager toolkits I've used for years, where you put a little training program together that's PhD, as I call it, you know, like the old cameras, push here dummy, right, that anybody could run. Very simple to do, but it would help the managers prepare the reps to use the job aids and prepare for a real sales call and put that into practice. Workflow support we've talked about, and in stage five, conversation intelligence or plain old coaching services. So that's just a starter point, right? You guys have brought up like three or four different options that you could plug into here to do better knowledge sustainment or, you know, better acquisition. And so if you sat down with this as a starting point and just started brainstorming, what do we have currently in our organization? And then if we have to close a gap, right, then you could set smart requirements and go look for the technology that would actually plug in and help you, rather than doing the, you know, the bright shiny object thing that I see so many people doing with tech solutions today. So this could really sort of be a template or a starting point for having those creative discussions and figuring out, all right, how are we going to do this, guys? You know, and if you're on a shoestring budget or you're COVID impacted today, you know, how can we do this low tech? But how can we help our people? How can we maximize the potential of our talent by ensuring we're giving them every chance to learn and succeed and get feedback and grow? And I love, Brent, that you brought up peer coaching or peer sharing, right? Because for years, in my early days in training, it used to annoy me at the end of a class where I had like poured buckets of sweats into trying to help people learn. And you know what they would say at the end was, oh, and it was so great that we got to spend time with each other and, you know, and share ideas about what was working. And I'm thinking, you know, there's some magic in that, right? And, you know, so, and now we see companies trying to foster that, trying to foster the sharing. Now, I will say it's a double-edged sword, right? Because sometimes you wind up with the blind leading the blind. Mm-hmm. So you have to watch out for this. I once saw a company implement a system where people could get on and ask questions and support each other and provide feedback. And what I noticed initially was that all of the people that were hanging in that system and sharing and talking with each other were people who needed help. And it wasn't seated with the top producers. And this was a regulated industry. So I had to start to moderate this group because people were saying, hey, try this or do this. And there were things that were just blatantly illegal. Right. Now, they just didn't know any better, right? You know, there wasn't any bad intent with that. But what we did to help that is we convinced the top producers to go hang just for like, you know, 30 minutes a week, a series of them, and weigh in on these questions or challenges or things. And once we did that, it started to add so much more value for the participants, right? And, you know, we did have to moderate it, especially in that industry, which was regulated. But that was a great way that we helped overcome the challenge of the blind leading the blind. And I do think that is sometimes, you know, a factor.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that ties back into the idea of, well, part of, you know, your long-term implementation and measurement strategy, making sure that people can see that if you have this kind of a role, we expect you to participate in this big picture along the way. Yeah, we have some great questions that folks have thrown into both the chat and the question panel.
Awesome.
Let's jump into a couple of those. What do you recommend for large organizations? Lori is asking in the chat, what do you recommend for large organizations with managers who can't easily observe and or listen to their sellers on the job, and everyone is remote and spread out geographically? How do they coach to mastery if it's all self-reporting or practice / pitchbacks?
Yeah, okay. So great question. So let me share a brief story to answer that. I was once approached by a a senior executive who said, could you help train our managers on how to coach more effectively? And I said, sure, happy to do that. How do you know they need that? And he said, well, we did this 360. And all the reps came back saying that, you know, they weren't getting any coaching for the managers. I said, great data point. Can I talk to your managers? And so we got together in a room with people for 2 days and all these regional managers. And we talked about that. We talked about expectations from their company and what they spent time doing. And at the end of it all, we had this massive list of things that the companies were expecting these managers to do. And we put reasonable time estimates next to all of these things. We totaled that up. What do you think it was? It was 110 hours a week. Now, out of all of these managers, 25 or so, one guy who was brand new was actually trying to do all this. And he was just burning himself to a crisp. Everyone else was picking and choosing the things that didn't get them yelled at by corporate. Right. And do you know what none of those things were? Coaching.
Yeah.
Right. So, Lori, to start to answer your question with a long-winded story, I would say that the first thing you need to do is get out of the sales prevention business. Now, I'm not saying you're in it specifically. Speaking generally, get out of the sales prevention business and ensure the managers actually have things removed from their plate to allow them to focus on developing and working with their team to get better results. Because guess what? That is the job of a sales manager. So, you know, if they don't have time to do some of this stuff, I've got to start asking, what else are they doing? And that would be job one. Now, in terms of being everybody spread out and remote, you know, what we're doing right here, whether it's, Zoom or WebEx or GoToMeeting or Adobe Connect or whatever the 10,000, options for web conferencing are on the marketplace today, do it over web conferencing. You don't need to have a phenomenal solution. You could, use something very basic to get people together face to face. You know what we did back in the dark ages when we were faxing things around? We picked up the phone, right? And you could have a great coaching session with somebody over the phone. It gets better when you're eyeball to eyeball. But not if you're coaching a phone rep, right? Or someone in inside sales, right? I would actually rather have that coaching conversation over the phone. The conversation intelligence apps that I mentioned earlier actually record live sales calls. And then what some organizations do, because again, managers are busy and they don't have time to review every single call, they actually ask their reps, pick a call that was an example of some place that you struggled. Pick a call that you were incredibly proud of and where you think you crushed it, and submit those two to me. And, I will review them in the next 2 weeks and we'll schedule some time to talk. Mm-hmm. I want to be clear that a lot of these apps do have.
Mike froze for me. Is it just me?
No, he froze for me as well. I was just about to ask.
I kind of feel like I did it by closing the video, by closing the screen share. I'm feeling guilty. Maybe I should have left that up.
No worries.
Hold tight, everybody. Don't bail out just yet.
So I've removed Mike, and I'm going to add him in again. Let's find him. And apologies to Mike.
It's always my fault, Q.
I am just looking for Mike in the attendees list. There we go. We'll re-invite Mike, and hopefully the technology. Yeah, maybe Frank chewed the cable.
Yeah. I have a great visual.
Yeah. You might, I don't know if it's handy, you might want to show that, because just before we got started, Brent discovered his young pup Murphy, contributing to the acquisition of a new headset for Brent. He's helping Brent in ways that Brent hadn't anticipated. I think Brent's actual phrase was, "That doesn't sound like the bone I just gave him."
This was the bone he decided to chew on this morning, which used to be a really fairly decent headset, but now it's a chew toy.
And Q is throwing out the groaner joke of Murphy's Law, given that that's Murphy is the dog's name. So, yeah. Well, we seem to be, I mean, I see Mike is accepted and connecting, but we'll see if he's able to pop back in here. But boy, gosh, we've covered an awful lot of stuff, and the visuals have been great too from Mike. It's such a helpful framework to just sort of help you picture it all in, you know, in motion, both of those visuals there.
Yeah, I was just in looking at it, each one of those squares could be its own show.
Oh, for sure. There's so much stuff that could be explored in either of those visuals. Mike's back with us.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. I pay a company who will remain nameless for uninterrupted business internet. Hello. I'm back after a business internet interruption. So I'm incredibly sorry about that.
No worries. So, we usually only run about to about the 45-minute mark. But there are a couple of questions that I did want to just toss in quickly and see if we could at least touch on them to help to not leave them hanging. So Kara was asking, with role play offerings, it can be often difficult for people to engage. What kind of, if any, coaching or prep do you provide for this to be successful?
Yeah, role play is that word that makes people groan. So as ridiculous as it is, right? I've tried to find other words for it. Mm-hmm. Let's do a practice session. Let's do a simulation. Let's, you know, do something, because, you know, I don't understand this, because for those of you who do work in sales, you probably know that there are so many salespeople and sales leaders are into sports, and they follow all these sports teams, and you know, they talk about all the coaches. And can you imagine a professional sports team without a coach?
Yeah.
Can you imagine an Olympic athlete without a coach? And what do we do in sales? Hey, go get them, buddy. You know, and you know, and you know, go get them, Tiger, is what I say a lot. So, I think that you have to ease people into it. I think you have to find a way to get to positive reinforcement as quickly as possible. And I'll give you an example. We experimented with this when I was at GE Capital. We had a company that came in and did this training for us. They did a good job. There was some role play. But the thing I struggle with role play is very often you're doing these triads, right? You're doing a sales rep, a customer, and an observer in sales training, at least. And they go through all of that. In the end, you know, the observer, who, by the way, has been going through the same sales training program that everybody else has in real time, is suddenly expected to provide some kind of expert feedback. Flaw number one. Flaw number two, the customer was really probably not, being represented as a very, very real customer. So I tried to set up different type of things where maybe you bring in some people, some executives from your company or other people, to play customers when you can. And that gets a lot easier, by the way, virtually, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when everyone's working from home, they can fire up and join a web conference meeting pretty quickly. But, you know, do that. There was a friend of mine who actually worked with a company called GLG, Gerson Lehman Group, who has all of these people who were, you know, were once in CEO, COO, CFO, you know, chief roles, high level roles in organizations. And she rented them basically to be customers for their company's role plays. And they went and got the personas that, you know, their salespeople typically sold to. So all of a sudden you get to this level of realism that makes people sit up and take it very seriously. Then it's about providing better feedback. in either you have to teach people how to provide better feedback, you have to guide that yourself as an instructor or facilitator, or just bring in expert coaches or people from perhaps your team who can coach to help make those coaching sessions more memorable. And here's a key. This is the long way around to get to my point. Sorry, at GE Capital. We did these little mini role plays, like single skill practices. We taught something, we practiced that skill. Well, here's what we did differently that made a massive difference. We did a little skill practice, and the group all gave this person feedback. And then mind-blowing, right? We actually asked them to do it again and use the feedback right then and there, right? And so then they did that, and they were like, wow, that got so much better. And then the group said, yeah, but try this or do this or do this. And then they did it again, right? So we had these people do it three times, get feedback, got better each time. People started to get so excited. One guy left on his lunch break, ran back to his desk, picked up the phone, and started to call some prospects, because we were teaching some prospecting openings. Came back from lunch, had set three appointments. All right. And the rest of the class was on fire from that point forward. Right. Mm-hmm. So you can use role play as something that's incredibly exciting if you're teaching people skills that will matter and that will help them get a better result. And then I really recommend, you know, do small chunks of things, and but give people multiple chances to get feedback and try it again, get feedback and try it again. Then you're really developing some behavior chops. And I, you know, that might be helpful. I hope it is.
Yeah, it's a key part of that is tying it to the real world need, the real world application, as opposed to something, you know, super artificial or not related, et cetera. It gets quicker buy-in for sure. And then one last question that we'll tuck in from Angela. What do you suggest for helping an organization train for safety and new processes related to safety when the evidence-based research is constantly evolving?
Yeah, that is a tough one. So if the information is evolving, the stream of learning has to be evolving, right? And so you'll need to find a way to set up some constant drip of learning. And so the parallel that I can make to my world, right, that might help. When you set up sales enablement teams, a lot of them these days are trying to become the single point of contact for between the rest of the organization who wants to tell the Salesforce something and the Salesforce, right? So the Salesforce isn't just being bombarded constantly from information from everywhere. And so what they try to do is get the rest of the organization, maybe the CEO and senior sales leader exempted, right? But to funnel their communication through the sales enablement team, who then puts it out to the sales force in the same place, in the same way and format, the same time, same bat channel, you know the drill, right? So what you're trying to do is get a level of consistency and expectation for how the information will be presented, where can they find it, and some regular stream of communication. Now, that's not exactly the same thing, right? Because the fact that the information is evolving as quickly as it is, and everything we're learning about something new in a pandemic, but that concept of creating a place where people can go and find the latest information, if something has changed, I would make that a bigger direct communication to people. You know, I would also try to have the information come at them from a variety of ways through this channel of communication you've created, then reinforced by their managers at a local level. You know, maybe some type of other reinforcement that happens, or other ways that they get information, a newsletter. Maybe it's reinforced in the meetings they have with managers, and then any corporate meetings that they have, or company meetings that they have weekly or monthly. So I would try to take it from every type of possible communication channel to them in the drip method, and then in the reinforcement methods. And I think that is probably the very best that we can do in a time like this, where, you know, you're right, the information is changing weekly. It's not like you're training somebody a skill, you just want them to get good at it. It's like, you know, there's a lot of changing information. It's tough to keep up on. So if it's part of their job, especially the safety or working with others to help make sure they're safe, You know, I think coming at it from multiple channels with reinforcements, the best way to go.
Yeah, for sure. Very great advice. Very, very solid stuff there. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. This has been fabulous. And the folks in the chat, great questions and stuff thrown in. As always, we have awesome folks that that join us in the chat. I think it's time now, though, Brent, that we dance on out for this week.
Yeah. Hey, don't forget to drop your information, Mike, into the chat there. Yeah. So people know how to get a hold of you, drop a website or your LinkedIn address or email even. You know, if you want people reaching out to you, it would be fantastic. I noticed some requests for some connection stuff earlier. So, yeah. And if anybody is listening to this later and you're not looking chat, you can always just reach out to us or connect with us at idiotic.com. There's all the information there for recordings and everything as well.
Yeah.
Okie
thanks
dokie.
Everybody.
We're out of here then.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Really this was great.
It.
And everybody, we'll stay safe again. And we'll see you next time.
That's right.
Bye, everybody.
We got Mike dancing.
Success.